This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As the debate continues about the American healthcare system, we have to face tough questions, not just about financing, but about the limits of medicine. In the new book, The Limits of Medicine, Edward Golub looks back on the history of medicine to understand the forces that shaped our approach to treating disease and our expectations of the medical profession. Golub was a professor of biology at Purdue University for 20 years and was the director of research for a pharmaceutical company for 5 years. He wrote a textbook on immunology and now is president of the Pacific Center for Ethics and Applied Biology. He says we're at a turning point in deciding what direction medicine should head in.
We have had the last 100 or so years where we've been deeply involved in dealing with infectious diseases. And we've gotten quite used to magic bullet cures for these. And I think that now, as we have an aging population, we're entering a new era of chronic diseases. And the biology that drives the scientific basis of the medicine is showing a new level of complexity of biological systems that we just didn't know of before.
So what does that mean?
It means that we've got to change the concept of what we do and how we look for cures or ameliorations. The main contribution of science to medicine has not been the drugs and procedures, as important as those are. And I want to make it very clear at the outset, I am not anti-medicine, anti-science. What I argue is that the real contribution was the changing concept somewhere in the middle of the last century from the way we had looked at health and disease for 2,000 years. We changed it to this idea of specificity. And once we could think of specific causes of diseases, we could look for specific cures. And given what I've just said about where we're going, I think that we have to have another change in concept, because these chronic diseases are much more complex than the infectious diseases. And we're going to have to reframe, we're going to have to reconceptualize the nature of disease, so we will then be able to reconceptualize what we do about it.
What are some of the medical problems that we're not really prepared for because we're using the old model of fighting infectious disease?
Well, take something like heart disease. It's become the major killer, but it's a disease of people of advancing years. And I can say that because I'm now into advancing years, but people over 50, say. And when we look around, if you look at the kind of the advertising, the fundraising, the general tone of how we're going to deal with this, it's to eliminate heart disease to extend life. Well, there reaches a point where some diseases are going to be so complex that we won't be able to cure them, we won't be able to eliminate them. Some of them are just going to be the results of living for 50, 60, 70 years. And what I argue is that we have to figure out a new way of extending health rather than extending life.
What do you mean when you say we should be extending health, not extending life? What's the difference?
Well, the difference is this, that through most of recorded history, death was associated with young ages. But now, this is the first century that death is associated with old age. As we enter this century, mean life expectancy was about 30-some-odd years. As we leave it, it's approaching 80. Well, we can't extend life much beyond 80. And anybody who's been around old people knows that's not the first desire of these people. But everything in our science, in our medicine, and in our psyche through this century has led us to believe that the goal of medicine, the goal of scientific medicine, is to cure disease to extend life. Now, obviously, in many, many, many cases, that's going to be very important. Somebody who is young and somebody who's 50 isn't ready to pack it in. But given the new nature of disease, given that these are diseases of older people, what I'm arguing is that we have to figure out ways to relieve symptoms, to extend as much normality as we can, fully realizing that in many cases we will never be able to get back to full normal function.
In your book, you write that what is done about a sick person depends on the conceptions of what is wrong with him. How disease is framed and how it's treated are two sides of the same question. But would you apply that to what we're talking about now?
Absolutely. Let's use rheumatoid arthritis, or just arthritis in general. When mean life expectancy was 30-some-odd years, and when only 2% of the population was old, anybody who had gnarled hands from arthritis was known to be old and respected because they had lived through all of the vicissitudes of age. Now, when we expect to live to 65 or 70, a lot of people have arthritis, and now it's a disease. I mean, I don't want my hands to be gnarled. I don't need a badge of old age. So we've reconceptualized, we've reframed arthritis from being kind of a badge of honor to being a disease.
My guest is Edward Golub, and he's the author of the new book, The Limits of Medicine, How Science Shapes Our Hope for the Cure. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with biologist Ed Golub. In your new book, The Limits of Medicine, you go back through history. You have a little history of medicine in your book. What did you hope to find by looking backwards?
Well, I expected to find the heroic, glorious past that I had been taught about in school. The book actually started out to be a history of immunology. But I decided, being the intellectual type that I am, that I would start off with a little history of what was the world like before we immunologists saved it for the rest of you people. And I found this dreadful world of death and dirt and disease. And I kept waiting for the point where we came onto the scene to fix it up. And I found that we didn't. It was sanitation that made the diseases go away for the most part.
Well, you write that sanitation, that there was a sanitation movement to clean up public cesspools. And before, it was understood that there were microorganisms in the effluvia in the streets.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? The effluvia giving rise to the miasmas and mephitic vapors. That part was great fun. What the sanitationists did was say, all right, we are now in the middle of the Industrial Revolution. Labor has become a commodity. The industrialists take care of, the capitalists take care of their spinning jennies and their plants. But here's one of the essential commodities that they deal with, labor, which is dying like flies. The mean life expectancy was 30, but if you were a working poor person in England in say, 1830, your mean life expectancy was 20 years. So clean up the filth that was everywhere, give them better housing, and they will live longer because you will be removing the dirt, which has the mephitic vapors and the effluvia, which are killing them. And the funny thing is it worked.
Okay, and it worked not because it changed the vapors in the body. It worked because it took all the bacteria and other microorganisms that grow in the sewage. So infections didn't
precisely,
spread the
precisely.
Same way.
But remember,
that's
you and I, of course, we believe that because we live in a time where this is what we believe.
I mean, we
know
the model.
Yeah, but remember that for 2,000 years, those folks weren't sitting around saying, gee, if only somebody could figure out what it was in the dirt that made us sick. And here we're getting bled and given diuretics and emetics if only real medicine came around. No, everybody agreed on those conditions. This is how disease was framed for 2,000 years. Now, we've changed it, and for the last 150 years or so, we have framed disease in another way.
When the germ model of disease became accepted and we had antibiotics to kill the germs, how did that change the approach to medicine? How did that change the whole concept of medicine?
Well, really, for the first time, you had the idea of a cure. That when you look back through history, that there were all kinds of healers. There were people who were physicians because they had been to university and could read Latin and Greek. There were surgeons who were barbers and did the bloodletting. There were herbalists. There were village wise people. There were all kinds of folks who performed healing acts, because there was nothing that you could do to cure a disease. You'd get the humors back into balance, which was essentially healing. And when we came to the germ theory, you could start looking for a real cure. You could look for something that was going to eliminate the cause. And once you can identify that this disease is caused by one organism and another disease is caused by another microorganism, you can start looking for ways of eliminating those specific organisms. And, of course, that's what we did with antibiotics.
Do you think when we started to look for cures, we forgot about the healing aspect of medicine?
Sure, but the ultimate healing is a cure. And it became a goal, which I don't think anybody can fault anybody for wanting to have that goal of curing people and extending their lives. But we did it so well that we changed the demographics of it, and in the course of doing that, we changed the nature of disease. There are still infectious disease. I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that it's not a problem. The reappearance of tuberculosis, I mean, AIDS, these are very, very serious problems. But I think that one has to look at it in perspective. AIDS is clearly the infectious disease tragedy of our time. But we know the causative agent. We know the mode of transmission. And we have chosen as a society to look for some high-tech solution to this. If we as a society say we're not going to talk about sex, we're not going to make condoms available to youngsters, and they engage in unprotected sex, the virus is going to get transmitted. If we say that, well, we're not going to ask why probably the richest nation there ever was on the face of the earth has this incredible drug problem, why people are driven to take drugs, we don't want to look at that. We're going to see it as a police problem. And we don't institute needle exchange programs. Well, the virus gets transmitted via blood, and we've opted not to do the public health mode and are looking for the magic bullet mode. Well, it turns out that this kind of virus is going to be very, very, very difficult to get a magic bullet for. And it will continue to grow because we're, in many places, not taking the proper public health measures.
Your book, The Limits of Medicine, is subtitled How Science Shapes Our Hope for the Cure. Would you explain the subtitle?
Yeah. The one of the central points is that disease is not something that's absolute, that the what we think of as a disease at any given point in history changes. And what science did around 1850, 1860 was help us reframe disease, and we knew what to look for. And now I'm arguing that once again, the nature of disease has changed, and science will once again shape where we go. And where we want to go, because of where we've been, is to get cures. So we hope for the cure, and here is science in the way we shape and conceive and frame disease going to, I hope, lead us into a new era.
You don't think we should stop looking for cures, do you?
Oh, no. No. Wherever feasible, that's... I just think that we ought not to make it an article of faith that there is going to be a cure, and that people feel that if we just throw more money at research in a given area, that there will be a cure. Because I think that that then takes away money from and effort from looking for ameliorative therapies. Insulin is an imperfect therapy. We all know people who are diabetic, who take insulin, and their lives are not normal. But their lives are infinitely better than they were before the discovery of insulin. Now, insulin does not cure diabetes. It's an ameliorative therapy. So I think that we ought to be looking for ways of making sure that people who take insulin don't go blind, don't lose function of limbs. But for many conditions, Alzheimer's, for example, I would be more than happy to see not an out-and-out cure, but the equivalent of insulin that would extend normal mental functioning of somebody as they approach 80 to get them through the whatever years they have left.
So that's a model that you think we'll be using more and more in the future, the model of insulin, something that doesn't cure the disease but helps you live with it.
Yes, but again, always while while we are doing, in the course of the research, that we look whenever possible for a cure, because there are going to be some things that there will be a magic bullet for.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I really enjoyed it, Terry. Thank you.
Edward Golub is the author of The Limits of Medicine. He's the president of the Pacific Center for Ethics and Applied Biology in California. This is Fresh Air.